Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant,
talented Shout Even Shy from the Faroe Islands, and singing and performing on the guitar of the words of none other than my co-host Jay Hatter. Hello, Hatter. How are you?
I'm okay, AP. Thank you.
Excellent, excellent. And I should say that this is a Team of Voices production for the group, A Team of Voices, on allpoetry.com. And if you do go, which you can do quite free, and organize yourself an account on allpoetry.com, you will see the group, A Team of Voices. You can come and knock on the door. And when you do so, you'll say hello to Deborah Lee. Hi, Deb. How are you?
Hello. I'm well. Thank you.
Excellent. Very good. And you'll see a whole heap of other poets there whole heap of different countries and places of origin, and some of those will be Stephen and or Kay. Hello, Stephen and or Kay. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Hello.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm looking at the felt up here on the board. It's very pretty.
Are you?
The butterfly felt.
Very good.
Yeah.
So, no, it's very good. So, does look the part, the blanket there. It's very nice. Now, whose blanket is that, Deb?
I don't know. I went looking for one real quick to put on the board, and of course, when I saw the butterfly quilt, that was what I do. But it's gorgeous.
Yeah, I know the way you went. Yeah. No, it is. It's very, very nice. So I should say our theme for this week, and it was my turn to choose, and so everybody can complain to me about it, is blanket. That's our theme today. So we're going to have poems about and with blankets. And I know, Stephen, that you are usually on the run and onwards and forwards to your work responsibilities. So I'm going to put your poem up on the board.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And it is there now. New problems.
I actually wrote this for one of Deb's contests. The picture was the prompt. And I don't know why it inspired what it did, but this is what it inspired. And I call this, can see my breath. I can see my breath beneath the comforter. Despite the fact that I'm down here, I feel you creeping in, invading sanctuary sheets to tell me of my sin. I do not wish to face the day, for it's as cold as ice. Under comforter, I will stay, where I am treated nice. Full of eyes, full of hate, depression covers my face. It holds me here inside my bed and tells me I'll never win the race. End poem.
Now, the minute you say cold as ice, I go to the song, Stephen. You know, you're as cold as ice, yeah?
You are the Foreigner, yeah.
Yeah, the Foreigner, yeah. Old Foreigner song. That's a really interesting image, and it's an interesting piece to sort of think about, that sort of the temperature change and the hot and the cold, and it does look like ice. I'll give you that. It really does, and so I can absolutely see why you went there. Really interesting piece, and I know Deb must have liked it, or she wouldn't have given it a bronze in a competition. Deb, what do you think of this piece?
Well, I like that he was all snuggled up in the blanket, for one, as we get our very first type of blanket. You think that, and then you see the picture, so the contrast is really cool. But I do not wish to face the day, for it's as cold as ice. Under comforter I will stay, where I am treated nice. It's like there's no place like being snuggled up under that blanket, under that comforter on a cold day, and the treated nice part was a nice touch too. But I also have to say that that's the first place my head goes as well, is Foreigner, when I hear that expression.
Yeah.
Really cool. Good to hear it again.
Yep.
And Hatter, did you want to say a few words about Stephen's piece?
Yeah, well, quilts and blankets and sheets and pillows, it's all about forts. I was an expert indoor fort builder. And yeah, I don't want to come out right under there. I used to build a haunted house in the backyard and keep it up until Easter because it was so cool to hang out in. Well, there was some credence to when my wife said, I don't have two boys, I've got three. Yeah. Yes, you do.
There you go. No, thank you, Stephen. Now, Stephen, I know you need to go quickly, but did you want to give us a little bit of detail about your next show or shows coming up?
Our next show is Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern. It's The Mortuary Shadows, and we're focusing on the cult classic movie They Live, starring Roddy Piper. I got quotes from the movie to write to.
Oh, my goodness.
That is that's the movie that has that famous quote that I've come here to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
Yep.
And that was actually improvised by Mr. Piper, too, so pretty cool.
Didn't Roddy Piper get an Academy Award for that? Should have.
Yeah, he should have.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Nah, beautifully done. Nah, well done. So, Stephen, I'll you can certainly hang around if you wish, but I'm very happy for you to disappear into the eve, so that I know you've got an early start tomorrow.
I do appreciate. Thank you very much. I wish I could stay longer, but the bed is calling.
No, I understand. No, terrific. Thanks for doing that. Thanks for calling and for the peace and all the best. And we'll catch you very soon.
Bye, Stephen.
Thank you. Keep the wind in
love
your face.
Yes.
Thank you.
Love and respect.
Okie doke. So, Patta, I went a bit mad this morning because I had no poems for this subject at about 9 o'clock Eastern time. And by the time we've got to 11 o'clock Eastern time, I've got three. So I've had three poems appear in the space of about 2 hours for this
particular See what happens when they lock
prompt.
You in?
I know.
Yeah.
No figure.
It's called lockdown.
But I can't go anywhere. And three very different poems. I've got a villanelle of French soldiers marching off to the front in World War One. I've got a poem that follows the story of one of my favourite West Wing episodes, which is In Excelsis Deo. And I've got a poem that's sort of like a love poem, really, a desire poem, and I've got that as well. And so I've got three different poems, very different styles. And I thought I might start with the one from the West Wing, Hatter, if that's okay. Because there's my favourite writer of all time is Aaron Sorkin, three series of the West Wing. And he had a special cadence around writing Christmas episodes. I don't know what it was, but he did. And this particular episode, which is one of my favourites, is from the first series. It's called In Excelsis Deo, is the name of the episode. And one of the main advisors to the president was called Toby, and Toby was like the conscience of the group. And Toby left his big woolen coat to the Goodwill, and the Goodwill to a person on the street who happened to be an ex-Korean soldier. And this particular person had nothing, and he lived under a railway bridge, and he passed away in the cold of the winter. And they didn't know who his relatives were, and so they picked up the coat and found Toby's details in it, and so they called him. And they said, "Is this person a relative of yours?" And he said, "He's not." But then he proceeded to find out who his relatives were, and he found another relative of his living in another under another bridge as an itinerant person. And what Toby did was that he went and organised a funeral for him at Arlington Cemetery with all military colours and a military detachment and the American flag and the whole works, without telling anybody. He just did it. And it was just a brilliant and poignant episode. And I wasn't the only one who thought that, because the episodes of The West Wing were actually given to the president of the Times media team to vet and to make sure that there wasn't anything that was going to cause grief. And the team who got this at that point in time were so impressed by the story and how it was written, actually had the person who was the head of Arlington Cemetery come and play the head of Arlington Cemetery. And they had the US Marine Corps detachment who actually went and fired the guns for the services, come and fire the guns for the service. And they let them film in Arlington Cemetery. And so just a brilliant story, brilliantly written by Aaron Sorkin, and I think Toby Ziegler, the character who, the guy who played him, got an award for his portrayal in this episode. Anyway, so this is Arlington, and so I'll just put it up on the board now, and it just basically follows the story of the episode of The West Wing called In Excelsis Deo. It goes a little bit like this. The great Cody left to the goodwill in this cold winter a blanket held. By us former soldier hard times fill, slept rough near railroad till felled. Taken by the winter and the snow, as taken by a country that forgot. His service by far battles let show, the bullets and gunfire, no yachts. Yet here he lay, passed by drums, with burning wood the only heat, and a man whose coat left numb, such waste and glories did meet. He arranged for a military service at Arlington, as was his sworn right. Headstones, they died serving us, too many rows that echo in what? End poem.
Wow, that last sentence is so true. I must say, aside from the fact that the poem is really amazing, the picture, as profound as that picture looks, it you can't imagine until you're actually standing there. It's like a sea of stones, of uniforms. I mean, it's incredible. It feels different standing there.
Yes.
I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah.
It just feels different. And I think that your poem gave a lot of honor to the place and to the soldiers, and to the story that you told before you read. I think this came out really great. Blanket of sadness.
Thanks, Steph.
There.
Yeah. I really like the writing in the episode, and I just thought I'd try and capture it. Sorry, Hannah.
What did the coat represent, symbolize?
The coat, because it was big and heavy, it was used as a blanket by the person who had no home, and so. But the coat had, there was no identification of this person, and the coat had the person from the White House's card in it. And Toby knew that he was a military man because of the tattoo he had. It was a tattoo of the unit, one of the units that served in the Korean War.
Oh, okay. All right. And this was a story, a book, a movie? Did they make a movie?
No, it was a TV show, Hatter. A TV show.
Oh.
And The West Wing. And back from a number of years ago now. A number of years ago.
I remember The West Wing.
Yeah, it was... it was a really interesting show. It just was a show that tried different things all the time. Like, for example, in its first episode, its very first shot that it did, went for 12 continuous minutes. And so they kept on one sort of area moved into another that moved into another that moved into another, and they did it as, 12 minutes sort of live to air, which was sort of unheard of back then. Really, really interesting show. As I said, really tried some different things.
Hmm. I remember it. I just didn't watch it.
Yeah. No, I've sort of watched every episode sort of multiple times. I've probably watched In Excelsis Deo in more than a dozen times, particularly the end, which has a beautiful alignment of the Christmas music and the service at Arlington. just a really moving piece of vision, really. So, yeah. So look, as I said, interesting show, and the, I just, you know, remembered the use of the coat as a blanket, and that's sort of where I went. So that was my first one, Hatter. So I've got two more yet, but that was my first one. Now you've got one up on the board as well, I see.
Yeah, I think it's good enough to read barely.
Okay. Righto. Well, no. And you, do you want to read it, or do you want somebody to read it for you?
No, I'd better read it. I wouldn't push this off on anybody. Hold on.
Okay. You look fairly confident at it, I have to say, but I want you to go for it.
Okay. For lack of a better first line, it's the day they found the royal crown.
Okay.
It goes like this. The day they found the royal crown amongst all the garage sale things with locks that got a lot in cost, but threaded with a golden string. Royal treasures that hold the seams stitched with gold to impress a queen. To find the treasure among the bling, to know what was everything. If you do find that the garage sale size or looks like worthless bling, check it twice. If it looks too nice, it could be made for a king. Yeah, I know.
I don't mind it at all. Because you know that that's how I started my business career, was selling at, you know, garage sale market.
Neat stuff. Sure.
Yeah. And that's what I did during university, and I became reasonably good at it, and so that I actually got myself into a market with fellow antique dealers, and I was a licensed antique dealer at the age of 19 here in Melbourne. And I sold stuff all the way through uni until I finished uni, and then I went on and became a business person, but that was how I started. And I had a couple of bits that you talk about, you know, treasures and looking at it a second time to make sure that it's not something that
treasure? What's the biggest? What's the best treasure? The best treasure.
Well, I was going to say I had two. There was a small painting that was had a damaged frame. The painting was about the size of a iPad in size, and it was very dark, and it was a scene of the ocean. And it was a very bluey dark green, and there was a sort of capsized little dinghy and a person on the dinghy, and then there was just there's foreboding clouds. Yeah. And
was it one piece?
Well, no, I was using it as a nail tray, actually, because I thought it was so damaged. But the painting itself wasn't too bad. It was obviously painted by somebody with some skill. So I had a look, and I could see forest there. It turned out to be an original oil painting by an English painter that painted in Australia, a guy called Captain Horton Forrest. And you know, I paid $10 for that painting. That it was, and it was painted in about 1880, and it went for $6,000 in auction in Melbourne. And the other one that I had was I had a marble bust of a lady, and that was more obviously a nice thing. But, you know, I paid $300 for that, and I think it's got
$3,500. Wow. Okay, what would be the biggest that slipped through your fingers accidentally or found out later?
Look, there's always stuff that you think you could have got more for. There was a beautiful sterling silver trophy from the 1890s that had these beautiful images of animals and kangaroo and emu and had this beautiful stand that a ball sat upon, and I paid $300 for it, and the person behind me said, I'll give you $1,000 for it, and so I sold it to him straight away for $1,000, and so I made $700 turning around, probably worth $5,000. So, you know, if I'd held on to it for longer, I probably could have done better. But it's actually in the. I love secondhand stuff, Hatter. So I'm actually really glad you wrote this poem because it's always been something that I really enjoy. If you'll let me, I might actually put up something that is something that I'm holding at the minute, because I still occasionally I'm about to put a couple of images of something up on the board at the minute that I bought before we had this horrible sort of lockdown, and it's a little tambourine, a little child's tambourine, and back in the 1840s they made tambourines out of the stomach lining of cattle. I think it was actually the gut of cattle. So that meant there was a surface, and it's got an image painted on it in oil. And I bought the tambourine for $50, and it was said to be a old Australian tambourine. And it was clear to me that it wasn't Australian, that it was evergreen trees, and we don't have the sort of trees that were on this tambourine. So that I was pretty confident that it wasn't Australian. I found out pretty quickly that it was an American tambourine, and the style of it puts it in about the 1840s. So I've just put a picture of it up on the board.
Sounds like one of those that they had sort of the missionary people that go around and donate money to it was not a barker. What's the word I'm trying to think of? Repent, the end is near. This kind of people that would come in and, God darn it. Anyway, they would shake the tambourine and go around afterwards coins and stuff.
Have a look at the picture of it, Hatter, up on the board.
Okay.
It's quite a lovely thing. Even though it is a bit, it is a bit damaged with time.
It's a little nicer. Yeah.
On the back of it, it's got a date of 39, which pretty clearly to me marks it as 1839. So it's a U.S. hand-painted tambourine from 1839. It has a signature, but the signature's blurred. I have a theory, Hatter. I have a theory about who it might be. And it's quite weird and wonderful, but bear with me. Back in the 1800s, there was a very well, there was a whole heap of painters. There weren't many things to paint on. And so what happened was that people picked up any sort of item to paint on because you couldn't just go down the road and get yourself, you know, a piece of board. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can make out that there's the word Cropsey on the back of this tambourine. And so I actually think Cropsey. I actually think it's the earliest piece by a very famous American painter called Jasper Francis Cropsey. He would have been 16 at the time. And it would have made sense that he would have picked up a tambourine to paint with it. And so there is a Jasper Francis Cropsey Museum. So my plan when we're out of lockdown is to actually take the tambourine with me to the museum and get the good folk at the museum to have a look at it and see if it is an early painting by Jasper Francis Cropsey. The giveaway to me is that Jasper Francis Cropsey signed his paintings with a very big wide Y, great big looping Y, and there's a great big looping Y on the back of this tambourine, and it would date to when he was 16, if it is the case, and so it would be the earliest known painting by Jasper Francis Cropsey, if that is correct. So,
holy cow.
Treating with some care. It's worth treating with some care, and it because that if that is the case, then it is worth some tens of thousands of dollars, maybe more. But it's just that unfortunately the signature is very very worn. I'll put the signature up as well, just so people can see from the back of the tambourine how worn it is. But it's just a fascinating thing, and I love. I mean, I spent literally days over one of the Christmases gone, the last Christmas actually gone by, going and trying to find painters from the Civil War that had the great big loopy Y in their signature. It literally I was going through, you know, painting after painting after painting and thing after thing after thing, and I finally found Cropsey, and I thought, you know, that the timing and the date and everything sort of fits. And so, as I said, the only people who'll be able to make sense of this and see if it's real or not will be the good folk at the museum. And so that to me is the logical place to go and take this piece and see. And I've just put up the signature at the back. And if you look, there's a very big faded Y at the end. And that was the symbol that Jasper Francis Cropsey used in his signatures.
Wow.
There you go. So I think, Hatter, the piece that I will make the most money off is probably the piece that I'm holding right now, the $50 tambourine that you can see. Because my theory after quite a bit of work is that that's the first piece from a 16-year-old Jasper Francis Cropsey.
Yeah, I'm searching. It doesn't have any of the little symbol, the little discs around the circumference of it in the frame. Does it have any of the other jingling things other than just the tambourine?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's got the little brass jingly things in it.
Okay.
But it, it, it's obviously, and it is a bit worn, but obviously, you know, if you're going to do an oil painting and it's 160 years old, it's going to be a little bit worn if it's sitting on a child's tambourine. But
yeah, if it's stomach lining, that's amazing that it's still together.
Yeah, and I actually have a further theory, and I think the person in the boat is his father. So,
say that again?
There you go. I think the person in the boat is Jasper Francis Cropsey's father. And I think it's the only image that of his father that exists.
And how do you spell his last name?
Cropsey, C-R-O-P-S-E-Y, Jasper Francis Cropsey.
S-T-Y?
S-E-Y, S-E-Y, okay. E for Eric. Yeah.
S-E-Y. Okay.
Yeah, E-Y. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, a very brilliant painter. Did some wonderful painting when he was a little bit older. But there you go. So there's my story of secondhand goods and the one that I think is the best one that I've bought, Hatter. And that wouldn't have come about unless you've written the poem. So there you go.
How many other do you think exist that he might have been made? That he might have made. I mean, is there any kind of a number in there?
How many paintings of Cropsey are there?
Any paintings or other mediums?
No,
that he used other than canvas.
The only catalogued paintings of Cropsey come from when he was 21 onwards, and they were all in painted frames, in on canvas.
Okay.
But it was well known. He won a competition when he was 14 as a painter, but his parents were too poor to buy canvases, and so. It was well known, he was the youngest of six children. It was well known that he picked up stuff and he just painted on it to teach himself how to paint.
Yeah, you can use certain kind of sheets, pure cotton, you stretch. I've done that before. It's a different kind of, But the whatever medium you're using it's different. Your brushes are different.
How it absorbs
is different. The bleed is different.
Yep. And so, you know, Anyway, we'll see. As I said, it's an interesting theory. It's the date fits, the style fits with some of his early paintings in terms of how he painted and what he painted. So, as I said, we'll put it in front of the experts and we'll see what they say.
That would be one of a kind. One of a kind.
That's my $50 tambourine. So, whatever happens, it's an 1839 American tambourine, oil-painted tambourine, and it's going to be worth $3,000 or $4,000, even if it's not painted by Jasper Francis Cropsey. So, you know, it's a bit hard to lose at this point, but as I said, if it is by Jasper Francis Cropsey, then who the heck knows really how much it's worth? It's you know.
That's incredible.
Anyway, there you go. But I do have a decent eye for old stuff, which helps. And you get that as you go on, Deb. You know, so you can. What do they say? You make your own luck sometimes, and you just get a feel for things. Sometimes I don't know what it is. I just got a feel for it, and I had to buy it. So, anyways, that's my thing. Now we might do another
one
of my.
And in the beginning, did you say $50?
Yeah, I bought it for $50. Yes, I did.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, anyway, we'll see. Whatever it's worth a lot more than $50, Deb.
That's what I was just going to say. No matter how much they put a value on it, there's no way that it's less than $50. So, wow.
No. It's worth $3,000 or $4,000 as a 1839 American oil painted Charles tambourine. So, whatever it is after that. Who knows? So, anyway, there you go. The Hatter, unless you'd written that poem. Deb, did you want to put one of your poems on the board? Because you've got a couple there.
Sure. Let me grab one.
Anyway,
do you ever have
paper
a sneeze that's stuck like right there and you can't?
Oh, I hate that. Yes. You don't have that
now,
do you?
Yeah, me too. That's why I'm so quiet.
Well, did you want me to read one of my poems while you get that out of the way? I know that is frustrating. Hello, Jeff.
Sorry. It doesn't feel like it's going to happen, and there's no sunshine to look at to make it, so I'm just going to give it a try. If I disappear, you know why.
Yeah, I know what's happening. Okay, cool.
Okay, and I just love this picture, and it's called She Blankets the Planet in Hues of Green. Just a little one. Once upon the railway line, trays rolled down the track. Then sliding on green beeswax crayons, Mother Earth snags all that land back. On the meadows, the trees and grass, the mountainsides and the beaches, her palette colors the landscape views. Pigments grow on spots she reaches. Ivy vines climb and flowers sprout, rise up and bloom, then blanket the world with spring perfume. And poem.
Isn't that a great image? Really, really cool. Really, really
Isn't
cool.
Isn't that
image.
Amazing?
And yeah, it's wonderful. And just a great image to write on. And but you really you captured it quite beautifully with the green beeswax crayons. It's a beautiful way to describe that greenery on that image. Yeah, really, really nice. Hatter, did you want to say some words?
Thank you.
About?
Yeah, it's a great, great write and great prompt to be writing too. That's a an old spur of the, so it is it Soviet or Polish? It's a train. They call it the love train or the, not the love train. Shoot. But yeah, what a cool picture to write to, and I like the way you use the colors in it. It might be one of the most written to pictures, also or commented on pictures. It was years and years ago. I used to have a picture editor like a Photoshop.
Yes.
But the whole program. And I could go in and change this and tweak that and everything. And that was one of the pictures I did. And that was so cool.
It's got an infinity look to it in my opinion.
Yeah, it really does.
Even something like a railroad that once upon a time had traffic running up and down it is now just this beautiful little cove, and it just reminds you that after us, Mother Nature will just take everything back.
Absolutely. Very it just that sense of infinity, doesn't it? Yeah.
It's an amazing photo.
Mm.
Maybe we should try this the next time we do the thing, Hatter, where you talk me into just doing one photo. Maybe we'll use this one and see how many different directions people go with this one.
That's a good thought.
Yeah, the
really
tunnel
like
of love. Yeah, the tunnel of love. I see. It's in the Ukraine.
Is it? Okay.
I think it might be. It's just absolutely gorgeous. I mean, I wouldn't mind walking there, taking a walk through the tunnel.
Yeah.
It's just a stunning place.
Absolutely.
It looks peaceful and untouched, and even though it's not, you know it's not. It's got years of history of traffic, but now it's just a beautiful place.
That could be Red Riding Hood sticking there in the woods.
It could be. I really like it.
Really cool.
And you certainly captured the difference, the differences in the light and dark of the green and the shades and the colours. It was really nice. There you go. Okie doke. Going back to the videotape, Deb, and I think I'm going to do one of mine. And we might do the first one I did, I think, which was the blue throw. So let me, because, you know, your poem was very, very green, and this one is very, very blue. So, you know, that's the sort of link between the two. One's green, one's blue. Here's the blue throw, and it goes a bit like this. There was a plant in the distance and her lipstick glowed pink, no. But we were not interested in that. Our attention's drawn to her throw. As her lithe limbs betwixt fold in, easier for fine body art to show. Her hands perfectly manicured, they hold tight a navy blue throw. And the illumination from a lamp, it provides the warm, sober glow. Shadows hide curves and bends, lie at rest under a navy blue throw. Your face is blank of expression, penny of for her thoughts left stow. Mind's eye is planning her future. Along carries her favourite throw. End poem.
How cool. Wow. It's like you stepped into her head and spelled out her thoughts. Or... like a penny for your thoughts kind of thing. Like you put it, that phrase was perfect for there. The weird part is when we first clicked on it, I at a glance, I could have convinced somebody that was a picture of me. It's like, whoa, what is that?
So there you go. But no, just an image I found. It's not an image I found. I liked the expression with the blanket, if that makes any sense. And I just sort of went with the expression and the fact that she was sort of holding this throw over her, and then away it went, and just the sort of poem wrote itself.
It came out really awesome. You know, it also has me wondering if she's, like, do you know this person? Or are we just contemplating, or do you know the answer?
No, I don't know.
Okay, because I was going to say, I was wondering if there was maybe a baby swaddled there and she just finished nursing. And
no. Yeah, well, it could be.
There's so many ways. This is
one
of those photos you could just go all kinds of ways with.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice image because you can look at it, you know, 25 different ways and they could all be right, you know.
Yeah. Like the blanket prompt.
Yeah, sort of like that. That was sort of, you know, where I was going. But anyway, it was. But Hannah, what did you think of this one?
I'm gonna have to pass on this one. My phone locked up. I'm messing with
Don't try to cross the room. It's not worth doing that. So, as I said, it was interesting, Deb. You know, sometimes you find an image, and that's the image that you had of the railway track with the tunnel. It's sort of this classic image, and you can pick it up and you can write about it. And there's no right way to write about it. You can write about it 25 different ways. And I looked at this image and I thought, Jesus, I like that. You know, and there's no right way to write about it, but it's just a great image, and I just thought, yeah, no. And the expression, and it was sort of almost like a Mona Lisa expression, kind of really interesting.
Yeah. And it's simplistic. I think that's why it can go in so many different directions, because it's however your initial impression hits you.
Yeah, correct.
Like you said, it's not right or wrong.
No. So, I anyway, there you go. It was interesting. I love oh, yeah, great image too, Hatter, of the train going through there. That's really cool.
Wow.
It's just one of those, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes the imagery, you know, can draw you into something, and away you go from there. So it's like we're going to have a quiet night today in terms of people calling in, Deb. So I'm wondering whether we do the collaboration next.
Sure, we can do that.
Yeah?
Yeah, and then I have one that's blue, too. And I
have one more, and we'll probably have an early evening, particularly if Hatter's struggling with the phone for it to do, you know, what it's meant to do. So.
Yeah, because then I can...
I might have to reboot. Give me 1 minute. I'll find out.
Okay.
Don't wait on me. I've got to let you know.
So, AP, did you bake yourself some cake or something yesterday? It must be hard locked in. Or got a bakery cupcake or something?
No, I got a cake delivered by my mum. And it's this massive sort of dark, rich sort of chocolate cake. And it's really sweet. And it's a lovely cake, and I can eat about 20 grams of it a day because it's so rich in potassium.
I call that death by chocolate.
Yeah. You have the really, really, really deep chocolate on chocolate on chocolate type cake with the chocolate on top and then more swirls of chocolate. That's what this cake is. It's amazingly chocolatey. And so I had about 20 or 30 grams of the cake yesterday, so like a couple of teaspoons, and I'll have another couple of teaspoons probably today, and that's about as much as I can eat, or I basically max myself out potassium, which is not a good thing for me to do. So it's a lovely cake, and I can eat such small amounts, but I enjoy it when I do.
Cool.
Well, I love the title. Sorry, Hatter.
You back?
Oh, just on my birthday, we would get whatever meal we wanted. My mom would cook it, mine was a certain thing. But I would get for my birthday, they'd make this. It was a double buttermilk chocolate cake pancake, and it was about 3 inches or 2.5 inches thick, and they put walnuts on one of them. And I didn't like nuts on my chocolate, so I would get one whole cake for me without nuts, and they'd make another one for everybody else. And it would be freaking richest chocolate. It was a double chocolate something. I don't know if they used buttermilk or not, but it was so good. I could eat that whole thing and not worry about it.
You're both torturing me now.
Jeez. No, I'm with you, Hatter. I could eat a whole, well, in a perfect world, I could eat a whole heap of that chocolate cake. But the truth of the matter is, just got to, you know, sit there and be very, very, you know, it'll sit there for a while.
Maybe you could freeze some and treat yourself every once in a while.
I will. I certainly will freeze some, Deb, because you're right. That's the best way to do it. But it's one of those things. It'll take me 2 or 3 weeks. So
there you go. Something to look forward to. A once a week splurge for the next 2 or 3 months. There you go.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
All right, so this was really freaky. The new artist that I found is Eugenia Lally. And let me tell you that she is, her art is all wacky like this. I have a whole folder full, so you will see this artist again on a Monday when I do the pick your artist. So keep an eye out for that. But in the meantime, this one is another 10 for you guys. Just thought I'd mention
that.
Hey!
What?
Here we go. I know, right? It's called The Water Consumes Us. Check out the air show. Here we go. Now, I don't know if I'm saying this right, Mo or Mal, but a Mo.
A Moa.
Holding the tie of
Moa.
Diamonds.
Moa.
Is it a Moa? And I did not know what that was, if it was so I looked it up, and it's a large, extinct, flightless bird resembling the emu, formerly found in New Zealand.
It's also what they
call
the statues on Easter Island.
Well,
correct,
and AP brought the island in. So you guys, again, of all the things you could home in on. Anyway. A moa holding the tie of diamonds is the mayor of Easter Island dressed in an Italian suit, wearing rocks with argyle socks, and the iris stands alone, while nearer on the white sand azaleas aplenty taken root. Mars or bust, they won't wait for us, now stuck here for a while, and visitors show concern left to watch the collision of the vessel. Meets a disco ball as flamingo callgirls stare from the gates below the vivid mirror ball with poinsettias on a trestle. The Queen Mary floats with rubber tube boats, but don't panic, those on board will not need to row. Floods and aqueducts sometimes have no luck, but for visitors, we have scored, see? Thunderbirds are go. End poem. It's like the world's flooding around you, but don't worry. Thunderbirds are
Don't panic.
Out.
Don't panic. The Queen Mary's about to crash, but it's all good because we happen to have the people who sorted it. Yeah. I had to go with the Thunderbirds, Hatter. I had to put the Thunderbirds in when I saw that bloody, you know, vessel there. Hello, Hatter.
I like how Hatter made those two chicks on the side call girls.
No. They weren't call girls. They call from the gates. They're not call girls from the gates. Girls call from the gates. Not call girls from the gates.
Well, either way, it struck me funny. I don't know.
Sure.
And the rocks with the argyle socks.
That was nice. I like that.
And don't worry, you don't have to row. I'm like, these guys are nuts.
I thought that was quite a good line. I was wondering what to do. Well, I always knew I was going to finish Thunderbirds Go. I just had to work out what I was going to do to rhyme with it. Yeah, so it was a backward rhyme from Thunderbirds Go. It was actually where it came from.
I must admit, though, when I looked over and saw the score, I was like, what? Because it's got like a 9 out of 10 and 0.07 for verb. And it's got how you usually only get a 1 for concrete versus abstract? This one got the whole 2. So it's a high 10.
Get out.
Like, okay, you never know.
Sure. Well, I don't know that algorithm works, Ada, but putting that to one side, it's a really intriguing image, and there's about 65 things you could comment on, and we've sort of commented on the 4 or 5 together, which is our way, I think. Yeah. But I actually think I really enjoy what the artist is trying to do, and that is just put some really interesting things together and just sort of, you know, set sail and say, well, you know, go put this in your pipe and smoke it. And it's really interesting.
Now, did you comment on the suit? Did you have a line for the suit?
He called it an Italian suit in one of his lines.
I called it an Italian
suit. Okay.
So I tied together the diamond necktie that you were talking about with the Italian suit, and it just worked out because you said the Moa, and he said the mayor of Easter Island, so that those two lines tied together. And then the part about the Queen Mary floats with rubber boats and the don't panic, those on board won't need to row. So some of them just automatically paired themselves up. And then I build from there. And you will always have enough in common to start out with a couple couplets and then spin the rest together. You just do. 48.
Interesting, isn't it?
48.
Amazing. I mean, I don't know how many tens we've got, Deb. I don't think we've got too many tens.
Maybe like three or four.
Approximately half a dozen at least, AP, believe it or not.
Good Lord. Okay.
Cool. Yeah, about a half a dozen-ish, or maybe one or two more. And I want to say one of them was only a four, but all the rest scored six or above. So, I mean, for people who aren't even speaking... It's just really uncanny.
Well, I think we similarly differently, Patter, which is kind of nice. Yeah, we're drawn to similar things, but we explain and describe them in different ways, and so that gives us enough that's common for Deb to work with, but it's never the same.
And even
inside.
When you peg on the same exact point, for example, that disco ball you called a mirror ball.
Yes.
So there's enough of a difference in the same exact thing to still work. So it just flows. It just works.
and sometimes it's I don't know. Sometimes things just work, don't they, Heather? And sometimes it's best not to even work out why they work. You just let them work. And I think that's an example here. You know, to all intents and purposes, it shouldn't work anywhere near as well as it does, but it does.
Exactly.
Yeah? That would be my summary.
It should not work anywhere near as well, but it does. How could we add something to it to test that theory of...
That's why I wouldn't muck around with it, Heather.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, no. But the minute
I say if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's where I'm going, Heather. That's where I'm going. It ain't broke, don't fix it. That's where I'm going. So, anyway, see.
Yeah, I'm not. People want to know. The people want to know.
They may want to know, but they're not going to find out. You know, so that's more important.
Okay.
Okie doke. I had a poem, which is not a bad effort, really, as I said, considering that I did three poems in the space of 2 hours this morning.
Wait a minute, I thought you were going to close out with yours. I have a blue one.
No, I'll do that with yours, yeah. I'm going to close it with yours. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, I think we'll close it with yours. This is a Villanelle, and it's sort of, I'm not 100% confident in it. Sorry, that's why I'm not finishing with it. But this is Three Cheers, a Villanelle. And it goes a little bit like this. Their silver blanket sat clutch tight, just received from an ordnance store, has marched away towards moonlight. Band kept the steps merry as light, glinting with polished metal left bore. Their silver blanket sat clutched tight. Three cheers loudly as passed by right, back here the general's planned war has marched away towards moonlight. Into sounds of shells, the guns' might of mud and the rats drilled to core. Their silver blanket sat clutched tight. Used bandage to wrap up blight or stretches to cover dead by score, has marched away towards moonlight. In weeks, no bands played to their sight when left trenches bloodied and raw. Their silver blanket sat clutched tight, has marched away towards moonlight. End poem.
Wow, you were in all kinds of a serious mood today.
Is there a repeated verse in there? I wasn't able to follow. Is there a repeated verse in there?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, well, repeated lines, trickled lines. It's a villanelle. Yeah, I don't know why I can't say that. A villanelle.
Yes.
So, like,
yes.
He brought down the marched away towards moonlight, and he brought down their silver blanket and sat clutched tight.
Because that flow, that's a good flow.
Yeah, I was quite surprised at it. When I wrote it, I thought it might have been off a half step, but it actually landed okay. When I put it on the page to start with, it was 9 syllables a line. I had to pare it back to 8, make it fit the form, and I was a bit worried when the pen might have stuffed it. But I actually was quite happy with that, actually.
Now, when you're writing, you have pretty much how you want to write it. Do you go into it saying, okay, I want inner rhymes here. I want a longer rhyme, longer line rhyme. I want to stick with that. You don't want to change, or you want to change that, break that pattern up. Do you go in there with forethought on your structure, or do you just let it go? That's the question.
Oh, I want that cake.
He doesn't know what I mean. Because I don't. If it goes to the long end rhyme and I break it up to the inner rhyme and then break back out of it, I don't foresee or forethought try to force anything. And that's probably why I don't like the forms. And you know which one I'm talking about.
Can you see it yet, Hatter? Because if you look, the bulk of it has an ite ending, tight, moonlight, light, and then the other also rhymes, store, bore, or, core, score, in the middle, and then he combines them. So there's one extra ite at the end of the last one as well.
Yeah, I was talking generically as a way you go into writing. Not necessarily this poem.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No. Look, I knew I wanted to write villanelle this time, Hatter, and so
okay.
I had the end rhyme in my head. I liked
okay.
the cadence between it and or as a contrast. And I've used that one before in villanelle. So I had that contrast in my head and I had the story of what I wanted to tell in my head. And then I found that image of the French soldiers from World War I going up to the front. And that sort of sealed the deal for me, you know.
I don't know what it is. With it, you handcuff me. It bothers my muse. I don't know. I go back to struggle. I go back to struggling. What's that?
I said you're handcuffed. Do tell.
Yeah, handcuffed. I don't know. Maybe that's my. My I don't know, the uniqueness of uniqueness of my own brain. I don't like. I like writing a lot of verse and going back and picking out which ones I want to use. And if it's long end rhyme, then it is. And if it's not, it's not. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever tried to write one of these. I'm going to have to give it a try. But you're really good at them. Sometimes you just, they're really hard. Because repeat.
You like the pros?
Yeah,
like the pros?
Well, the repeat either makes it or kills it.
Yeah.
There's no in-between.
Yeah. It's got to be a powerful first verse if that's the one you use, or you know what's good? It usually the end two lines of any verse is usually a hook, whether people know it or not. That's usually where their power is.
Right. All right. So I guess mine's on the board. And Hatter, do you know what we're doing next week?
I'm going to throw a dart here in a minute.
Oh, okay.
Excellent.
He says a dart.
Okay.
I sent you both the photo for next week's collab. I could not find the artist on this one, but I didn't care because I thought it was really cool. Send it anyway. And before I read, I just want to shout out real quick for Monday's show. It's a special showcase show night. I'm doing it on my Monday, and tied into a personal prompt. So there's lines from poems by Titus Llewellyn, as well as a bunch of recordings and stuff of his. The year 2021 is the year of his 70th birthday, and he is celebrating it for the entire year. So it's going to be like It's a showcase show, but featuring the fact that, you know, he's 70 this year. So if you guys would check out topic board and choose one of his lines for inspiration. I also took all the lines that I chose from his poems. I spun a word bank out of. So there's a word bank and a quote. So
brilliant.
Anything that you are inspired to do would be awesome. In the meantime, I'll put my Lou on the board, and then Hatter can throw his dart.
You.
All right. And this is called Blanketing the Bayou with Blues. And I love this photo, too. Anyway, monsoons blow with whistles and winds, thrashing the wetlands of the bayou. Dunes dock at the pier in the marsh, just as rain blankets surfaces with dew. Coastline shakes from rattles and booms, and the lightning harpoons pierce the indigo views. The lagoon mirrors the sky colors from cloud-stained dark lobster blue. Cornflower blanketing the cobalt tints the blueberry and blackberry, too. Neon lavender lights the background with metallic denim and periwinkle hues. At dawn, the tangerine sun rises high to shine hot orange rays on the view. And boom.
Yeah, nice. Love the blues. Love the blues. I love the image, but I love the blues. And the coastline shakes from rattles and booms and the lightning harpoons. It's really nice. I like I've never heard lightning contrasted to harpoons before. It makes a heck of a lot of sense, to be honest, but it's because it's right on so many levels. But I've never heard it before. But really, really beautiful and beautiful rhyme as well. So, well done, Deb.
Thank you, and that's my favorite part, the lightning harpoons. I felt so brilliant after I wrote that line. I had never heard it before either. Isn't it funny how that happens sometimes?
No. It's like, you know, why hasn't somebody, you know, actually used that line before? I've never heard it used before, but it's brilliant. That's spot on.
Which line are you talking about? Which line?
Coastline shakes from rattles and booms, and the lightning harpoons pierce the indigo views. and harpoons, lightning harpoons. It looks like that it's, you know, the bolts are harpooning the top of the of the water there.
Oh, yeah.
So it just.
Yeah.
I don't really often say I like really like this one, but I do like this one.
No. But I mean that stand there. It's sort of like, you know, you look at it and you go, geez, I wish I'd written that. You know, it's got that all over it. Anyway, that's just me. Hatter, what did you?
I was thinking of possibly. Using a poem of mine as a prompt. Is that allowed?
I'd say it's allowed.
Yes.
Well, look at that. Look at the one I put out there. A can of 10 shades of gray.
Okay. Hold on. Let me go.
I have two versions of this. There's two different Indian. There's two different Indian. Verses. And this is one of them.
It's the same
poem up to the last verse, and then I've got two different endings. So I was thinking of...
Okay.
Pick the ending and write.
This will be the...
Write me a different ending. Take the last verse out and put your own in. That's doable.
You can do that. You can do that, or you can write a poem inspired by the poem itself.
Yeah, could do that.
Yeah,
let's do that.
Either way.
Just how it inspires you. Can shade
however,
of gray.
However the poem. Yeah. However the poem inspires you. Yeah.
Sounds like a plan.
I think that's the way to go. Yeah?
Should I read it for all the thousands of people listening?
Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah. Good.
Can I, when I wrote this, the movie and book of 50 Shades of Grey or whatever that is was out, and even Kevin had come up to me and he said, yeah, I might want to change that title. And I refused to do it because I knew nothing of the book. I knew nothing of the movie, and I wasn't going to change it because I thought it was perfect. I can't attempt changing it. It goes like this. I watched a blind man painting on a blustery, cold winter's day. He asked me if I had with me a can of 10 shades of gray. I heard a musician playing under a hot summer moon. He asked me if I had written the songs that made him blue. I saw a preacher preaching in glorious springtime dawn, rhyming words and questions, singing a biblical song. I left the poor man wishing for the dreams that never came true. The sky he kept reaching for, did you know that I loved you? I've learned how to see it all differently, painted in a colored pretense, in a world of simple complexity, pretending you know what it meant.
Cool.
I think it's just enough abstract in it that people get their own.
It's got space, Hatter. No, it's very good. So no, I think that's absolutely cool.
Yeah, I like it too. This is going to be interesting, and I think we should maybe use the photo as well.
Sure. I agree. Yep. Use the photo as well. I agree.
Cool. So I'll fix up the topic afterwards.
Okay, thank you.
And looks like we finished everything up then.
It does.
So Monday, Titus.
Monday, Titus.
Yep, Monday, 10 o'clock Eastern, Titus.
Okay.
And do we
say that again?
Do we have a show tomorrow night?
If we do, it would be a private one, but I don't know under
Fine.
Circumstances, so just keep an eye out.
Okay. We've got a whole heap and people not so well and everything else, so we'll just see. But we will see you back on Monday for the Titus program, and we will see you in a week's time for the three of us, where we will be talking about the poem A Can of 10 Shades of Grey and what that actually goes and that does for people and what we find, Deb and Hannah. We should be fascinating.
Sure should. And one last quick question. Are we on Tic Mac Po next?
I believe we are. It's next Friday, isn't it, from memory?
21st. Okay, just making sure.
Yep. No, I've got to do the most of it at the start of the week. I've got a board and planning day all day Wednesday, and then a board meeting all day Thursday, which is a little gruesome. So basically a 14-hour day followed by a 10-hour day Wednesday, Thursday. So I just need to do it in the early part of the week.
Well, I also sent you a suggestion that might take one of those poems off your plate. If you saw that in your inbox.
Did see that. Yes, I did see that, and I thought that was an excellent idea, so I will share that with the poet concerned.
Awesome. All right, guys, so check out the collab picture, and I will talk to you both soon. I always love hanging out with you guys. Love and respect.
No. It's been good fun. I'm just trying to think what image we might go with, and with then what tune. And I think I'm going to go with the Pretenders to finish, Dev, and Chrissy Hynde
Brass
and that great version
pocket?
Of Brass.
Chrissy Hynde.
Yep.
Middle of the Road.
Yep. Great voice. So
there we go.
Thank you, everybody, listening in.
If you go on Facebook and look up the Queens of Rock and Roll page that I manage,
yes.
You go look at the female rock singers that are listed as the Queens. And Chrissy Hynde
cool.
is one.
Yeah. Well, she definitely is. So thank you to everybody. Great show and enjoyed it. And we're going out with Brass and Pocket. Talk to you all next week. Bye, everybody.
Alrighty.
Got that in pocket. Got that all. I'm gonna use it. Intention.
Bye, everybody. See you next week. Have a fun for the week. Cheers.
See you later. Thanks, Deb.
Bye.
Bye, AP.